If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. Hi, welcome back here to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. By the way, plug for the folks at Zero Res. Had a kid who threw up pizza sauce on the carpet.
Yeah.
Thought I was buying new carpet. Called Zero Res. Mwah.
Wow.
Ain't buying new carpet.
Nice.
So that was awesome. So we didn't do what Rob said we were going to do. So we'll see you, Mick, as Mick hung around for his final segment. And now Rob says, no, there will be no final segment with Mick Schaefer because we are going to get caught up. We got behind with the head coach, Andy Reid. Happy to do it, though, to speak to the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs as they bring to an end training camp 2018, the Chiefs' final practice. They head back to Kansas City. We stay in St. Joe at the 139th Airlift Wing. Today was Military Appreciation Day, the 139th Airlift Wing in St. Joe, part of the Missouri National Guard. 1,200 citizen airmen. There are anywhere from around 1,100 folks that might be on the base at any one time. I know because I took the tour, and what an impressive group of individuals that are here. If you want to be a part of this great base, 816-344-1976. I mentioned the gentleman who gave me the tour today and last time, Colonel Cluck, started as a airman below first class, basic, and is now a colonel. And he is the vice wing commander. He is second in charge at this base and has worked all the way up. He's from right down the road. So the chance to advance is right here, the GI Bill. Great benefits are all here. It is the home of the C-130 Hercules cargo aircraft, and it is a very impressive plane. We'll talk more about that later on, the air show coming up. Let's talk some baseball. Russell Carrollton is with us. He is the author of a new book called The Shift. Also writes for Baseball Prospectus. Got a great piece out on what The Shift is doing to baseball. We talked to him about that right now as he is on our Sprint guest line. Russell, how are you, sir?
Life is amazing.
Well, then that the man, you're as good as it gets. I would agree with you, and I love the fact that this isn't the what I expected when I sat down to read the article, and take a look at the findings you're coming up with. It's not what I expected, right? The shift has been accused of bringing scoring down in baseball and being a big negative to offensive baseball. And at the end of the day, your conclusion is that that's not really the case, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I think that, you know, for a long time, we just thought of what the shift did when the ball went into play. And, you know, you can see a lot of the time, guy gets shifted, ball gets hit to, you know, the second baseman is playing in short right field. Normally that would have been a base hit if he's playing in his normal spot, but, you know, it becomes a 4-3 put out, and you go, oh, man. And, you know, you occasionally you see one and he shoots one the other way, and that becomes a hit where, you know, it might not have been otherwise. But, you know, intuitively we kind of know that there are more hits that turn into outs than outs that turn into hits. But, you know, what I asked was, okay, well, you know, what about some of the other things where the ball doesn't go into play? I asked a question kind of tongue-in-cheek once, and I said, how many home runs are hit in front of the shift? And people looked at me kind of weird. You know, well, the ball goes over the fence. The defense can't do anything about that. I said, well, okay, but let's think about it from the pitcher's point of view. You know, does the shift kind of freak them out? And I've heard pitchers talk about, you know, the shift makes them feel a little uncomfortable. So I started looking for, well, what happens there? And what I found was that if you look at the number of walks that happen in front of the shift, they go up. Now, at the danger of trying to do math on the radio, which is always fun, what happens is that,
right,
you know, the number of walks that you find goes up based on what you would over what you would might expect otherwise. And so what I said was, you know, the shift isn't stamping out players getting on base. It's just changing the way they get to first base. And there are just more walks than there are hits removed when you do all those calculations. So, you know, it's actually bringing offense up.
And that's what was amazing. And it's funny because Jason Hamill, who's had a kind of a tough year, had kind of a tough couple of years with the Kansas City Royals, moved to the bullpen. But he talked earlier in the year, you know, there was a lot of stories written about how the Royals were embracing the shift more so than they ever had. They were kind of they've been thought of as a team, although they actually have a very big metrics department and do pay attention to it. They may not adhere to it all as much as everybody else. But this year they really embraced the shift. That was one of the talks at spring training. They were going to do it. And Jason Hamill was, you know, quoted after a game he pitched poorly. He's like, well, you know, I don't like the shift. And everybody kind of was like, you know, stop whining, stop complaining, stop making excuses. But in reality, the shift does seem to be getting into the heads of pitchers. Is that something that will shake out over time, that right now it's bringing up the walks, which is bringing up the offense, but once pitchers get used to it or they're indoctrinated into it in the minor leagues and learn to pitch with it behind them, that we will see those numbers correct themselves and it become more efficient in what it's actually trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because we don't know if it's, I mean, I can look and I can say, well, you know, for one thing, pitchers do pitch differently in front of the shift. They throw fewer fastballs, and they stay off the plate more. Well, you know, I mean, I can't jump into their heads and ask them, why are they doing that? You know, are they staying off the plate because, you know, they're trying to stay away from the ball being hit into play because it, you know, it's kind of weird with three guys on one side, and what about that big hole on the left side or whatever? Or, you know, another theory that I've heard from some people is that, you know, one of the ways that hitters have responded to the shift is they said, well, if you're going to try and set a trap for me if I hit a ground ball, I'm going to try and elevate the ball. And, well, you know, while I'm at it, I'll try and elevate the ball over the wall. And so pitchers are saying, well, if you're going to be trying to swing for the fences, I'm going to stay off the plate, not give you anything that's going to be on the plate to hit. But, you know, if you know, then you get into, well, the batter does this and the pitcher does that and the cat and mouse game that happens at the major league level. You know, if they're staying off the plate, maybe, you know, hitters are just kind of spitting on those pitches and say, well, if you're going to walk me, I'll take first base. That's fine. So, I mean, it's interesting because there are so many moving parts and because, you know, baseball at the major league level is played at that level of thought that, you know, it's hard to say, will it eventually shake out? I have done some research that says that, you know, pitchers who don't seem to do the, I'm going to stay off the plate more than I would otherwise have in front of the shift, they actually get the benefit of the shift when the ball's hit into play, but don't have the walk problem that goes along with it. And so they would actually be good candidates to continue to do that. Now, how deep you have to go into a pitcher's mind or subconscious or whatever, get them on the couch and talk them through, you know, pitching down the middle or, you know, at least on the edges and staying in the zone, that's a harder thing to get at. But I think that's the next question that the analytics departments are going to be looking at in concert, and this is going to have to happen with pitching coaches and managers kind of doing the human touch around, okay, here's what you're probably thinking out on the mound, and here's a way you could make an adjustment, and then working with pitchers to actually physically make that adjustment.
And that is the big picture. And so what should a manager, like what should Ned Yost do immediately? What is the optimum tactical approach?
Well, the tactical approach is that if you could get your pitchers effectively to not be freaked out by the fact that there are three guys on one side of the infield, and to, you know, to say, all right, you know, your usual pitch mix is, you know, this percent fastball and curveball, and you like to throw this on this count and all that sort of thing. And to not get too deep into, okay, now that I know the shift is behind me, I'm going to change the way that I pitch. Because what we see is that, you know, the way, at least in the league-wide aggregate, that pitchers are changing in ways that actually don't benefit them in the end. So, I mean, if you're Ned Yost, then you have to sit down and say, okay, you know, I'm guessing that, you know, there is a human cost to this weird strategy. And, yeah, you're kind of feeling a little off on it. It can be, if you do it right, it can be a net positive for the team. How can we work with you to work on not altering how you're approaching a batter so that, you know, when it all shakes out, you know, we are actually getting a net benefit statistically anyway from the shift itself. So, I mean, I think that's where, you know, as a certified numbers guy, I write for Baseball Prospectus, you know, I do the numbers. This is where, you know, I have to kind of put down the calculator and say, you know, this is where the game becomes a human game. This is where managers earn their money. This is where you have to actually sit down and be kind of an armchair psychologist with your pitchers. And that is where I think managers will earn their money. And I think also where, you know, there has to be a little bit of humility within the analytics crowd to say, look, we can get you this far, but, you know, I can tell you what the thing to do is, but, you know, can I work with a pitcher to tell him how to better mix his pitches? I don't know. He's not going to listen to me, but he might listen to a pitching coach or his manager.
You know, it's one of the things that I think that once it's done and ingrained in them, that they will come around to. But what I cannot believe, and you referenced this just briefly in the article on Baseball Prospectus, by the way, we're talking to Russell Carrollton, who's the author of the new book, The Shift. You know, what I can't believe is that guys aren't bunting. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that what is just such a fundamental in every peewee baseball league. I mean, I guess if you're, you know, Bonds or, you know, some of the real mashers out there, okay. But if you're not at least a 30 home run guy, then dropping down a bunt would seem to be the obvious thing that you need to be doing. Are you stunned that guys aren't just taking that free base? And how much it absolutely, you know, magnifies the inability of big leaguers to bunt?
Oh, I'm absolutely. Every time I see in my book, I dedicated a chapter just called "Why Didn't David Ortiz Bunt?" And it came from I was at a game with my dad, and we were watching, and Ortiz was they were playing the Red Sox, and Ortiz was up, and they, you know, had the shift on. My dad said, "Why didn't he just bunt?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why doesn't he?" And so I really looked deep into that one, and you know, if you do the math on this one, it is not even a question. That even though, and you'll hear the objections, bunting is hard. Yes, bunting is hard. You might bunt and miss. You might bunt it back to the pitcher, and he'll throw you out anyway. You might, you might mess up. And even if you make room for all of those things, you know, bunting, if you do it, depending how you look at it, works about half the time against the shift. At least we've seen. And that's, you know, that's probably with a bunch of guys who were just kind of doing it, just, you know, spur of the moment, I'm just going to drop one down here. And, you know, it works about half the time if you math it out. And you are, you know, you would be in line if you did it all the time to have one of the most productive seasons in baseball history. And, I mean, that's the thrilling thing that it comes down to. And the part where I go, you know, it might just be a single. But, you know, you cut down so much on the number of times that you make an out. And if the first thing you want to do as a batter is you don't want to make an out, well, that's, you know, now they're giving you a way to not make an out, get yourself on base. And, you know, once you're on the base, you can run around a lot more, and hopefully the guy behind you can knock you in. So, I mean, I think that, yeah, there is a need for players who are seeing a lot of shifts to take some bunting lessons, because they can take what the defense is giving them to the point where the defense will eventually shut that down and go, you know what, we're not going to do that. Well, then they've taken you out of the shift, so you have a little bigger hole to work with when you are swinging away.
Well, and if there's a guy on second, I mean, they've got to play over there. I mean, they'll
right.
You know, if there's the potential to just walk over to third base and steal, they'll play over there. So it's not like this is, you know, every one of your at-bats are going to work like that. So it is
right.
Part of it. But I'm just, you know, I love how you put, you know, why didn't David Ortiz bunt? I mean, it's amazing to me that skill. And listen, I know the baseball season's a grind. It's 7.5 months when you add in spring training, and it's 8.5 months if you play all the way through to the World Series. I get that, but for all the things they do now with all the nutrition and the lifting and the perfect workouts and all those different things, that's somewhere in there. Bunting would you know, wouldn't be a part of what it is they're doing is just staggering to me. About where it is. Did you find anything that there's a, and I know one of the things you broke down was the partial shift versus the full shift, and one of the conclusions was go all out. If you're going to shift, don't partial shift, because that can drag down your success. If you're going to do it, shift all the way, you know, commit to it wholeheartedly. Is there some next wave with guys like you and so many different people studying the numbers? Is there a next wave? Is there a next shoe to drop and how the game is going to evolve? Or, you know, at some point do we get to we've figured everything out mathematically?
Oh, if only we could figure everything out mathematically. That would be wonderful. I mean, every once in a while somebody will say that, oh, everything that's been discovered, that can be discovered, will be discovered. And then 10 years later, that person looks silly. And, I mean, there's that. I mean, I think that the next thing, and I'm always hesitant to say the next thing, as if there's only going to be one of them. You know, I think one of the things that you alluded to was, you know, the nutrition and the workouts and all that sort of stuff. But really paying attention to, you know, these men as human beings, you know, not just as, you know, number generators or random number, I guess, probability generators, to the point where, yeah, we can study them, we can look at them, and in an honest and scientific way, not to, you know, believe fairy tales or anything like that about how things work. But then, you know, once we've discovered these things, you know, players should do X. Well, okay, you're still dealing with people who may have not done that in the past, whether it's bunting and, you know, working on, you know, why should I go and do bunting lessons with the hitting coach for half an hour when I can do something else? You know, why is that important? And then explaining, you know, not just, hey, it is important, but also getting past that resistance and working specifically with, okay, you are a person, you may or may not like what I have to tell you, but then, you know, working on how do we get from, you know, what I like to say is not just, yeah, fine, sure, I'll do it, to, yes, this actually makes sense, and I am willing to commit to doing it. You know, that's the, I think, the next, one of the next steps. And, you know, that, again, is a very human thing that has to happen in the game of baseball, something that, you know, you can't put into the numbers. It's something where you have to talk to leaders, and you have to talk to the kinds of people that these players trust and build some of those connections. So, I mean, you know, you can get so far with a spreadsheet, but, you know, my own personal background is as a psychologist, and in the therapy room, you can tell somebody what they need to do, but you actually get them to do it by them learning to trust you, that you know, you actually know what you're talking about, and that you have their best interest at heart.
And you know what? Sometimes the proof is in the pudding. You got to go out. You got to get them to do something. You got to get them to have success in it for people to believe and follow through. I mean, how much did everybody just want to completely laugh at the Phillies? And I'm drawing a blank. Their manager. God, what's his name? I know he's a big stat guy.
Oh, Gabe Kapler.
Gabe Kapler, thank you. I remember him as the muscly guy for the Tigers when he came up. That's what he was known for when he first came up, was he was like a fitness freak that came up for the Tigers, and that's a pop. But, you know, he had whatever, one faux pas or something early in the year, and, oh, my God, this landslide of how he's an idiot. Well, now the Phillies are improbably maybe a year or 2 years earlier than anybody thought, competing for a division title, and suddenly there's a mass acceptance to Gabe Kapler as a manager and his methods and theories, and he's big on the stat community. We're talking to Russell Carrollton here in the program. His book is called The Shift, and if you love where the game is going, you're going to love the book, and you can find it online at where books are sold. Russell, let me give you my final four quickies. I'll ask you a question. Use some of the first thing that pops into your mind, and I'll start you with this right now. The World Series. What's your prediction on the World Series? Who beats who if you had to? We won't hold you to this or anything, right? But if you had to call it right now, who would beat who?
Oh, goodness. I'll go with Boston over, in the National League. I'll go with Boston and the Cubs in the all-annoying World Series.
It would be two of the worst fan bases.
I say that as somebody who lived in Chicago for 6 years, and I can say that.
Yes, I think you can. All right. When was the last time you were at an NFL training camp?
When I was about 9 years old, unfortunately. I grew up in Cleveland, and
That's awesome.
I remember going once, and that was about it.
Well, I don't know how old you are, but probably when you were nine was the last time it was worth going to the Browns camp. That's for sure.
Actually, yeah, that's true.
All right. Yeah, yeah. When was the last time you were stopped by an armed guard?
In 2006, when I was in Russia with my wife. All the movies that you see growing up that I did, you know, in the 80s and 90s, the main character, the main villain was always a Russian wearing a military outfit. You know, I get there to the airport, and my wife's from Moscow, so we get there to the airport, and I see all these guys, these Russian-looking guys wearing military outfits and carrying guns. And, you know, one of them, you know, kind of stopped and said, "Hey, can I look in your bag?" "Don't kill me." This is a 20-year-old looking for a job.
Yeah, yes, it's a... Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's wild because you know we always talk about we come to the base here. You know that's the first thing you do. You gotta go by, and you're like you realize it's that realization that this is real when you do it. All right, the last one: will Dayton Moore return the Kansas City Royals to the playoffs? Yes or no?
Well, eventually, yeah. I mean, it's just got to be at some point. But I mean, the Royals are at a point where they have a lot of work that they have to do in terms of the rebuild. But, you know, I mean, one of the things we know from the stat community is that, you know, 3 years out, it's basically just a throw in the air as to what your record is going to be, and your current record has very little predictive power based on that. So, I mean, it's not that, you know, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. It's just that, you know, within 3 years, a lot can happen, and we don't know. So, you know, I would call it a 50-50 shot, sure. I mean, it's as good a good bet as anything else.
All right, we hope so. Russell, great stuff, great work on the article. Congrats on the book. We really appreciate it. Again, it's called The Shift. You can find it out there. If you're a baseball fan, you're going to really enjoy it. Thanks so much for the time, Russell, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, you bet. Russell Carrollton talking baseball. We are at a place with armed guards. I felt better this time, but it still is.
Yes,
it's real. And I told my kids because they came up and were here earlier, and I said, "Now listen, a mom pulls up, and someone's gonna ask you're gonna be quiet and you're gonna behave.
No funny business."
Yes, because we came in two cars. I said there'll be no messing around, because you know it's serious. It's a different dynamic.
It is.
Yeah.
Different level of serious. I just love, "Don't kill me," when he's a Russian guard. I thought for sure he was going to say no.
I thought he could go two ways with that. One was either that, you know, I was laughing at the guy because I thought it was like a movie, you know, or is like, you know, I'd always seen that they were the bad guys. And so, you know, that's the other way. "Don't kill me." It's because the Russians are always trying to kill us. So interesting. Well, the folks that protect us and keep us safe are all over this country. And some of them, you don't even realize that they're right in your very own backyard. And that is the 139th Airlift Wing here in St. Joseph, Missouri. The C-130 Hercules cargo aircraft base is out of here. This is one of their bases, and they go all over the world from here. The Middle East, Germany, you need all the guys that are on that plane. You need all the guys that get that plane in the air, then all the support staff, 80, 90 medical folks that are here. There are jobs all over. And I think what's amazing, just so you know, that not only are these C-130s coming out of St. Joe right here, but this is the place that all of our allies who fly the C-130, there are two locations in the United States that they get trained on their evasive tactics, basically their emergency tactics in the air and everything. Two places. There's a place in Arizona and there's a place here. They come here first for like a week or 10 days, then they go there. So our allies come from all over the world to right here in St. Joseph, Missouri.
Yep.
This is where they learn.
How about that?
How to stay alive. And I was listening to one of the pilots explain how they beat A-10 Warthogs and I think it's F-16s that they train against, their tactical maneuvers. If those planes are coming after you, this is how you get down on the ground or up in the air and out of the way and avoid them. It wouldn't seem possible.
It would not.
Right?
That's it's hard to get your head around that kind of
stuff. It is. It is. But that's the real world. That's every single day. That's what the guys in the plane are doing, and that's what the guys on the ground and gals on the ground are doing to make sure that this plane is ready to go. And the intensive nature of everything that goes on up here is just absolutely phenomenal. So if you want to be a part of it, 816-344-1976. Free tuition. I think this is great. Free tuition in the state of Missouri for college, universities. That is part of it. They will train you in all kinds of different career jobs. So if you're sitting there and you're a young man or woman and you're not sure what your future is, think about it. Pick up the phone, call 816-344-1976. If you want to remember the website, the web address, 139aw.ang.af.mil. That's 139th Air Wing, Air National Guard, Air Force, Military. That's what the abbreviations are. On the website, if you Google it, you will find it. And but you can also just call 816-344-1976. We'll take a break. Talk a little football coming up with Tim Grunhard here shortly. We will talk a little more baseball if you want. Got a little bit of time to take some calls. 913-310-810. You're in the program.